Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we've got a fascinating stack of sources, really from the cutting edge of mathematical physics. Our mission, basically, is to uncover something quite beautiful and, honestly, a bit strange. It turns out that systems you'd think are totally disconnected, like particle movement, how crystals grow microscopically, even the energy levels in quantum systems, they seem to share the exact same statistical fingerprint.
That's absolutely right. We're diving into some specialized research here, focusing on shape fluctuations in random matrices. The sources look at several two-dimensional random growth models.
Mm-hmm.
And the core idea, when these systems get really large, their edges, their boundaries, they don't just wiggle randomly in the way you might expect.
Not the simple randomness.
No, exactly. Their fluctuations, the sort of bumps and wiggles, are governed by a specific probability distribution that actually comes from random matrix theory. It's quite unexpected.
Okay, let's unpack that straight away. Before we get tangled in the mathematics, what are we actually comparing? What are these key models that connect to random matrices?
Right, so we're mainly looking at two models that are, well, fairly intuitive physically. First, there's a geometric model. It's called the randomly growing Young diagram, denoted AAT. Just picture a shape growing over time by adding little boxes, but it has to maintain a corner shape, kind of like, you know, building a perfectly staggered wall stone by stone. It models growth with constraints.
Okay, so like building with Legos, following a rule, and we're studying the edge of that wall, essentially. How do we measure its randomness?
We look at what are called shape fluctuations. If you think of n as the, say, linear size of this growing diagram, you'd typically expect the sort of average bumpiness, the standard deviation of the boundary height, to scale with n raised to some power, some exponent. Let's call it chi, t.
Right. And usually for simple random stuff, like diffusion or a basic random walk, you'd expect chi to be 1/2, wouldn't you? Leading to the normal distribution, the bell curve.
Exactly. That's the classic central limit theorem territory. Pure independent randomness averages out nicely, scales with the square root of the size.
But you're saying these systems are different?
Yes, because they are interacting systems. That's really the crucial difference. The rules of growth, like you can only add a box if the spot is allowed by its neighbors. These rules create correlations, even between distant parts of the boundary.
Ah, so the particles or boxes aren't independent? That interaction must change the scaling, change that exponent chi. What do the sources say about the Young diagram specifically?
Well, they show that as this geometric shape gets infinitely large, it actually settles into a predictable ideal shape called A0, $8 alls. And this ideal shape isn't just a straight line either. It's bounded by two straight segments and, interestingly, part of an ellipse. But the real juice is in the fluctuations around that ideal boundary.
Okay, and the sources connect this geometric picture to something more dynamic, like particles moving.
Yes, that's the second key model,
yeah.
The totally asymmetric exclusion process, or TASEP. TASEP is a really standard model in statistical mechanics. People use it to simulate all sorts of one-dimensional things, like molecular motors moving along DNA, or even just cars in single-lane traffic. You have particles on a line, zeros and ones, say. The particles, the ones, try to move right, maybe with some probability in one version. It's $1 colors from a geometric distribution. But they can only move if the space immediately to their right is empty, a zero.
Like a very strict one-dimensional traffic jam. Okay, but why does the math overlap with the Young diagram, the growing shape?
It turns out there's a direct mapping, a mathematical equivalence. You can relate the position of the nth particle in this TASEP line directly to the height of the Young diagram boundary at a certain point. They're really just two different ways of looking at the same underlying mathematical structure. One's geometry, the other's movement.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting then. For both the growing shape and this particle traffic jam, what is the fluctuation exponent, the chi, that's been proven? And what distribution emerges when we look at the big picture?
This is the core finding, really.
Yeah.
Across these models, the Young diagram, TASEP, and some related ones, the fluctuation exponent, t is consistently precisely 1/3.
1/3. Not 1/2.
Not 1/2. 1/3. That's the first big takeaway. The standard deviation of the fluctuation scales with the cube root of the average size, not the square root.
So the boundary is actually smoother, relatively speaking, than it would be in a simple random process. N to the 1/3 grows slower than N to the 1/2. That suggests the system is somehow strongly regulating itself, keeping the bumps smaller.
Precisely. It's much more rigid than simple randomness. And then the second part, when you take these fluctuations, say, the height function G, at scaled position, geogoe, gamma, n, a, $9, and you rescale them correctly using that n to the 1/3 factor.
You zoom in appropriately.
Exactly. They don't converge to the Gaussian bell curve. Instead, they converge to a very specific, different distribution, the Tracy-Widom distribution, called F-SES.
Tracy-Widom. Okay, that's the aha moment you mentioned. It feels like it comes out of left field. We started with shapes and particles, and we end up with a distribution named after mathematicians studying matrices. Tell us about where F-S comes from.
Right. F-S is fundamentally the limiting distribution function for the largest eigenvalue of a large random matrix, specifically from the Gaussian unitary ensemble, or GUE, as the size of the matrix, N, goes to infinity after you scale the eigenvalue correctly.
Let me jump in for a second, just remind everyone. Random matrix theory started partly as a way to model the energy levels in really complex quantum systems, like heavy atomic nuclei. You couldn't calculate the exact levels, but Wigner and others figured you could model their statistical spacing using matrices with random entries.
Exactly, and the GUE is one of the main types matrices with entries drawn from Gaussian distributions. Their eigenvalues represent those energy levels.
So the largest eigenvalue is like the highest energy level.
That's right. And FS tells you the probability that this highest energy level deviates from its average position by a certain amount in the large system limit.
So hang on. You're saying the statistics describing the fluctuations of the highest energy level in a complex, maybe chaotic quantum system are identical to the statistics describing the bumpiness of the edge of our growing shape or our particle traffic jam.
Yes, that's the surprising universality. It feels almost too neat to be true, but the math is solid.
That seems profound. It can't be just a coincidence.
And it's not just physics. To really hammer home this universality idea, the sources highlight a purely combinatorial example. No physics, no geometry involved.
Yeah, what's the abstract example?
It's the longest increasing subsequence, the LIS, in a random permutation. Take a random jumble of numbers like 4, 1, 3, 2. An increasing subsequence would be 1, 3. That's the longest one here. Length is 2. Now, if you look at the distribution of the length of the LIS in a very long random permutation, rescale it properly.
Let me guess.
It converges to the Tracy-Widom distribution, FS. And again, with that same characteristic, 1/3 exponent scaling.
Wow. Okay. No particles, no energy levels, just shuffling numbers, and you get the same statistical law. That strongly suggests we're tapping into something really fundamental about interacting systems.
And it holds even when you change the type of randomness at the microscopic level. The sources discuss models using those geometrically distributed jump times we mentioned for TASEP.
Right.
But they also look at models where the randomness comes from exponentially distributed variables.
How does that change things? Does using exponential waiting times instead of geometric ones break the pattern?
Well, mathematically, switching to exponential variables connects the problem not to the GUE, but to a different random matrix family called the Laguerre ensemble. So on the surface, it looks like a different mathematical problem. But remarkably, the sources confirm that both types of models, geometric and exponential, still lead back to the very same Tracy-Widom distribution, FS, in the large-scale limit.
So connecting this to the bigger picture, TASEP, Young diagrams, permutations, random matrix eigenvalues, they're all different physical or combinatorial processes, but their large-scale fluctuation behavior is dictated by the same underlying mathematical structure, the same universal law.
Exactly. It suggests that maybe the specific details of the microscopic interactions, whether they're geometric steps or exponential weights, they kind of get washed out when the system becomes large. Only the universal behavior remains.
Which is fascinating, but how do we actually prove that a system based on, say, discrete geometric steps ends up obeying the same rules as something derived from continuous eigenvalues of matrices? What's the mathematical bridge?
Yeah, that's the crucial part, the underlying structure. It really comes down to looking closely at the exact probability formulas. When you analyze the probability that the height of the geometric growth model, GM, NA day, is less than or equal to some value, Tories. You get a formula, it's equation 1.13, one of the key sources, it looks complicated, involving a big sum over many variables. But buried inside that sum is a really critical piece, a product term that looks like prod I neck J, height man,
yeah,
U2. Okay, hold on. That term, the product of squared differences, that rings a bell. It looks like the square of a Vandermonde determinant. Why is that term so important? Where else does it show up?
That term is the mathematical signature of repulsion or interaction. In random matrix theory, that exact kind of term, prod facta 2, using eigenvalue variables 6 of 1ing, appears in the joint probability density of the eigenvalues. Physically, you can think of it as representing a repulsive force between the eigenvalue, sometimes called the Coulomb-gas interaction. It's what stops the energy levels from clumping together randomly. It enforces spacing.
Ah, I see. So the same mathematical structure that describes the repulsion keeping quantum energy levels apart also shows up in the growth model, presumably describing the correlations that keep the boundary from getting too jagged, or the taste set particles from bunching up too much. Precisely. It's the mathematical embodiment of that self-regulation we talked about. And then, when you look at the probability distribution for the largest GUE eigenvalue, PlemdaMax, LichtDI, that's equation 1.14, in the source you find an integral formula with a remarkably similar structure. And crucially, it also contains that same prod, DG2 factor. The underlying mathematical skeleton is the same.
It's like finding out that two completely different languages, maybe one built on discrete counting and the other on continuous measurement, actually share the exact same fundamental grammar.
That's a great analogy. And because the structure is so similar, we can use similar tools to analyze them. The key tool here for handling these limits and distributions is something called the Fredholm determinant.
Okay, another technical term. What's the role of the Fredholm determinant here?
Think of it as a way to package up the information about the correlations in the system. It often expresses the probability that a third interval is free of eigenvalues, or, in our case, free of particles or boundary points above a certain height. Both the distribution for the growth model height and the distribution for the largest GUE eigenvalue can ultimately be expressed using these Fredholm determinants.
How does that work specifically?
It works through things called kernels. These are functions inside the determinant that capture the specifics of the model. For the growth model with geometric variables, the distribution can be written using something called the Meixner kernel. For the GUE eigenvalue limit, the distribution involves the very famous Airy kernel.
So different kernels. Meixner for the discrete case, Airy for the continuous limit. Why different kernels if the final distribution FS is the same?
Because the Meixner kernel is tailored for the discrete nature of the geometric variables, while the Airy kernel naturally arises in the continuous large-scale limit of the GUE problem. The absolute core of the mathematical proof connecting them is showing that, in the appropriate large N limit, the discrete Meixner kernel actually converges to the continuous Airy kernel.
Ah, that's the bridge. The specific kernel for the growth model transforms into the universal kernel from random matrix theory when you zoom out.
Exactly. That convergence is the mathematical guarantee. It proves that the asymptotic fluctuation behavior of the geometric growth model must be identical to that of the largest GUE eigenvalue, which is precisely the Tracy-Widnam distribution, FS.
That's incredible. It implies that if you can identify this kernel structure in other 2D growth or related models, you can basically predict their long-term fluctuations without running massive simulations.
That's the power of it. It connects the structure of fluctuations in these many-body systems directly to the known mathematics of random matrix theory, which originally described, complex quantum systems.
So what does this really mean for predictability? Are we converging on some kind of universal law for these interacting systems? It feels like the microscopic chaos just canceled out, leaving only this fundamental N13 Spalling and Tracy-Wyndham shape.
I think that's the main thrust. The N13 and the Tracy-Wyndham distribution aren't just quirks. They appear to define a whole universality class, often called the Kardar-Parisi-Zhang, or KPZ class. These findings provide a solid mathematical underpinning for why so many different physical processes seem to belong to this class.
Which leads us nicely to that final provocative thought you mentioned, stemming from conjecture 1.9 in the source material. We've seen this works for geometric and exponential randomness, but does it work for everything?
Yeah, that's the big open question, the quest for true universality. Is the Tracy-Wyndham distribution the inevitable limit for all models in this broad class of growth and percolation processes, no matter what the specific random variable distribution is at the micro level? Provided, of course, they satisfy some basic assumptions like having finite moments.
We've seen the specifics seem to vanish macroscopically for the cases tested, but proving it holds universally for any reasonable starting randomness, that's the challenge.
Precisely. Is FCANRS truly universal for this kind of constrained growth?
Yeah.
That's the frontier. And it's certainly something for you, the listener, to think about. How often does this kind of deep simplicity emerge from apparent microscopic chaos?